The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
I'm just really touched. What a beautiful song this morning. And this is the first time I've been in front of a congregation since the pandemic started. So thank you for inviting me. It's a big responsibility to be asked to have something to say after all that we've been through in the last several years. So I always try to think, like, what is the one thing that I've learned that I hope others can maybe benefit from? And I was talking to my daughter about speaking here this morning, and she has experienced my fiery side, which of late I've been able to tame. So she suggested the title, Retraining the Dragon. And I considered it the highest of compliments. When things are going well in my life, that fire is passionate and creative and full of energy. I'm ready to burn the candle at both ends. But when I'm stressed and anxious, ungrounded, or out of sorts, my fire means I usually need to apologize and rethink things. And I don't know about you, but there's plenty in the news, the upheavals of everyday life that keeps me, and I expect not just me, very unbalanced. Sometimes it's just subtle. I wake up from an anxious dream. Thank you for the illustration, Kat, that was beautiful. And I feel like I'm in a house with so many rooms that I'm getting lost. And then sometimes it's right in my face, and I'm weighed down by the loss of women's rights. It can range from smoke in the air that we breathe, to days that are too hot to survive without air conditioning, to our tax dollars spent to assassinate people in countries that we have been bullying for decades. It can be hard to wake up refreshed and put my energy into enjoying life and creating what I do best. These kind of things, from the universal to the petty, honestly, can make me want to spit fire. It might be as simple as waking up on the wrong side of the bed, all anxious and triggered, or it might be as complex as the habitual worry for a family member who seems to know no end of struggle. Perhaps you struggle too, wanting to valorously take on the world, activated by a desire to protect someone or something essential to life. And many of the world's religions have practices to ease these heightened states. When I went to seminary, I was chomping at the bit to learn how to pray. I studied Qigong and Tai Chi because I love that sense of embodied practice. I studied scientist Teilhard de Chardin's Ignatian Ways, Buddhist meditation, and I prayed with a group of Muslim friends led by a fellow student. I was really impatient to learn how to bend the mind and the spirit toward better ways. Rather than approaching my innermost parts with the delicacy and the gentleness that Nancy Schaeffer uses in her short poem, when she says, how shall we mend you, sweet soul? I had a much more martial and disciplined attitude born of a fiery spirit. And when my fiery spirit ignites, it gets hot. Just a little example. When I was growing up, my dad was really sensitive to noises. And my brother and I were actually scared to even make a noise while he was driving. And things like the neighbor's dog barking would just send him around the bend. So not surprisingly, I've been a light sleeper for much of my life. Noise, either while sleeping or waking, can have a surprisingly strong effect on my being. One of the things that seems to get me every week is this assault by the leaf blower that the gardener uses in our neighborhood. It has me like feeling like it's chalk on fingernails on a chalkboard, or you know, wanting to pass laws against them. And often I just can't focus when I hear it. I would wonder, are they blowing a big mess into my yard that I'm going to have to clean up? And you know, sometimes if I couldn't stand it anymore, I would just go get groceries or take a walk to get away from it. Have you had those things that trigger you where you can't concentrate or feel like you have any choices? Maybe it's not just a loud noise, maybe it's something else for you. And you might wonder, what does this have to do with church? Or theology, or one's spiritual side? One part of practical theology is our beliefs about human nature. Do you believe people are inherently good? And I can tell you, when I see red, when I'm triggered, it's very hard to notice and introduce the thought that perhaps I should be happy that someone out there has called 911 and they're getting a response, right? I should be happy that my neighbors are doing their best to keep their yard looking great. But I don't feel or act or think anything that's kind or generous toward other people when I'm in that state. It makes me doubt my own ability to do right by other people, and it makes me doubt other people as well. But if I can take a few breaths and kind of be with that hard edge, the fluttering in my torso, the sort of butterflies in my brain, I always know that I have more choices than might be obvious. I was talking to a friend about a difficult situation, and she said, "Oh, did you have a carefrontation?" Me? No. But I appreciate that kind of framing and encouragement to let the words that I can't find have some space to just come into my being with that breath, as the song Unwritten says. Maybe you are the sort of person who can easily just put that situation aside and focus on other things. So perhaps this sermon is for someone that you know or love. But speaking personally, for whatever reason, whether it's part of my genetics or conditioning or my brain chemistry, I've come to see how ruminating on a perceived affront saps my energy and can lead me to be very hard to satisfy. I've known this about myself since childhood. So recently, when someone mentioned the words DNRS to me in connection with overcoming allergies a couple of years ago, I was instantly intrigued. It's a cognitive behavioral practice, dynamic neural retraining system, DNRS. And it is a whole way to notice that I'm triggered, and identify the thoughts, the feelings, the behaviors that are associated with that triggering, and then shift the patterns in my brain chemistry incrementally, day by day, situation by situation. Now, with the loud noise of the leaf blower, for example, I acknowledge that it bothers me and that I want to stop that pattern. I notice that my brain is stuck in a rut. Naming this and naming that this keeps me scanning my environment for irritations and ruminating on how irritating it is and wishing I could be in control of banning them, naming that helps me know that this is just a brain pattern and it can be changed. What a relief to know that this is not fundamentally who I am, a leaf blower hater. And it's actually not how I have to react going forward. In the words of our song earlier, there's a possibility for a story that is yet untold. And it's about then that a delicious feeling wafts in with the fresh thought that I can shift my focus, shift my mood, more importantly, by thinking about an enjoyable memory or something enjoyable in the future. And this allows that irritation to be married to the brain chemistry of good feelings. So this consternating patterned response can be changed going forward. One of the biggest aha moments I've had during the last few years was realizing that when I'm triggered, I'm actually in the perfect neuroplastic state that's ideal for rewiring if I can bring the necessary awareness to it. So this awareness consists of recognizing the triggering and setting my mind to switching the mood. Acknowledging patterns that contribute to the triggering and then accessing the good feelings associated with friends and adventures and feeling connected, feeling awe and wonder and joy and ease. Amazing. What brings about this brain change isn't just feeling it for a moment, but it's actually more like stewing in those good feelings for 5 to 10 minutes. Whoever thinks to do that, like you might be able to crack a joke, but can you really let it go and then feel those good feelings for a reasonable amount of time? And taking that 5 to 10 minutes several times a day, depending on what kind of patterns you're trying to change, creates the internal brain chemistry associated with love and care and nurture. Those dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, epinephrine, neurotransmitters that actually change the thoughts and feelings and behaviors in the moment for how your patterned response can be next time. Unlike spiritual practices that I've done in the past that do the same thing, they recommend an hour of meditation or prayer, this practice creates a connection that feels kind of like a portal, transporting my mind from one state of activation to another. Just as Kat mentioned in her reflection, so much of our response to everyday life has to do with habits or habit energies. I really noticed this about 10 years ago. I was hiking by myself, and I was out on the John Muir Trail for several days alone. And I was so scared. I spent hours praying in the best way I knew how, And yet, when I finished, I realized I couldn't remember very much that I enjoyed, except for the occasional things I took a picture of, because I was so amped up in that triggered state. I'm so happy to report that now, this summer, 10 years later, 10 years of working to change habits has helped me both sleep more soundly, wake up more rested and refreshed and less anxious. And I was able to take in the joy, the beauty, and the awe of wildflowers just springing out of every rock and corner, and cascades of water flying across granite that swirls and has these beautiful colors. And those soaring, jagged peaks that just go on and on and on. That's a place where you could get lost in reveling. And I hope everyone has the opportunity to do that, even if it's just through pictures. In fact, I noticed a pretty big shift a couple months ago. Some neighbors several houses away were having a party, and it sounded like Mardi Gras out there. They were just whooping it up and reveling. My husband and daughter were like sheltering them inside, exasperated but enduring it. And I ended up going out into the night, and the fact that the neighbors were celebrating something just tickled me. I never would have thought I could have that kind of experience a few years ago. I'm well into my 50s, and there are just certain patterns of being that feel both familiar and unwelcome, even if they might be justified in some way. Now I can associate them with thinking patterns that have gotten reinforced for whatever reason. Thinking patterns that I would like to be released from. Some of these patterns are like checking my body for pains or things that feel weird. Scanning the environment for triggers. Having a very negative looping conversation going on inside my head. Blaming people or trying to justify my words or actions. Other patterns might be procrastinating and rushing and perfectionism. There are a lot of these patterns. I've learned that much of these patterns are part of the limbic system functioning. So between your cerebral cortex, where all your logical, intelligent thought is going on, and your brainstem that just keeps you alive are your amygdala, your hippocampus, your cingulate gyrus, and other organs that regulate these autonomic processes that have to do with memory and emotion, with reward and pleasure and addiction even. And because what fires together wires together, a favorite saying of cognitive scientists, sometimes things that happen together get associated in your brain, even though there's no real causal connection. Releasing yourself from thinking and feeling that things that have wired together must always be associated is very freeing for the spirit. This DNRS, or Dynamic Neural Retraining System, can help untangle that crosswiring. And that crosswiring, for me, was a big part of feeling anxious and ungrounded and unable to focus when I was triggered or checking for threats. If I hadn't spent this year of digging to undo this crosswiring, I'm not sure I would believe it was possible to shift into making so many more enjoyable memories more often, into being able to live in the moment and be at ease. This retraining works by recognizing the emotional patterns and triggers associated with shifting into fight or flight, and it works to marry the ease and good memories and personal values with those patterns so that your rest and digest chemistry can heal the affront and help create more options for living in the moment with a sense of humor and joy. It has, day by day and moment by moment, helped me change from responding with that fierce dragon-like fire to an irritation to reserving my passion for creative, playful responses in the best moments. And then, when that falls short, redoubling my efforts to rewire. As I age, I know that my ability to make a difference is about the ways I can surprise both myself and others and my loved ones with writing more care and love into those untold stories that we will share going forward.
A couple of weeks ago, the Reverend Margot Campbell Gross and worship associate Sam King shared perspectives on the choices that we make in response to life. And in some ways, I feel that today is a continuation of that theme. Choice. The first thing I thought of while listening to Sam's reflection was the scene in the movie The Matrix, where it's explained to Neo that no matter how pleasant the computer simulation, human minds reject it unless we're given opportunities to make choices, or at least the illusion thereof. We humans need to feel like we are in control of our lives by being free to choose which actions we take. But are we really free to choose? Obviously, there are physical constraints. I cannot choose to fly like a bird. And there are also social constraints. I can physically choose to not wear clothing, but there would be social repercussions. Lastly, there are karmic constraints. For example, my mother and I loved each other, but while she was alive, we argued constantly, mainly over how I should live my life. Such was the pattern of our relationship that if we talked for longer than a few minutes, my body would tense up, anticipating an argument. Years after her death, I had a vivid dream where Mom was with us again. In my dream, I knew that she had died, and yet here she was. Overjoyed at the reunion, we talked, initially lovingly. But within just a few minutes, we're arguing again. Her telling me, giving me advice on what I should do, and me angrily rejecting it. When I awoke, I both laughed and cried. Here I had my mom again, and I couldn't even go a few minutes without falling into the same old pattern with her. Now, if you had asked me, Kat, you have 15 minutes to spend with your mom again. Do you choose to spend that time arguing with her? The answer would, of course, be no. I would not choose to do that. And yet that is what I did. That was the result of karmic constraint, or what Zen teacher Thich Nhat Hanh calls habit energies. The choices that we make in life don't just have external consequences, they have internal ones as well. Actions taken get reinforced so that we're more likely to respond the same way in the future. And the more times that we repeat a certain act, the stronger that habit energy becomes. Like wheels wearing ruts into a dirt path, it becomes easier to follow the ruts and harder to veer away from them. To put it in neurological terms, certain synapses get strengthened over others so that they are activated more easily. We form habits. There's nothing wrong with habits, of course. We tried to create healthy habits, such as exercising and flossing. And when you're going home thinking about something else, it's habit that guides you to make the correct turns at the right time, even when your mind is elsewhere. But if you didn't want to go home and instead had planned to stop at the grocery store, you may find, if you're not paying close enough attention, that you've gone home instead anyway. Well, at least I've done that. It's not that you made the choice to skip the store. It's that your habit energies steered you towards home. Thus, your choice was constrained. Similarly, it's not that I chose to spend precious time with my mom, arguing with her. But the habit energy of reacting to her by arguing was so strong that without thinking, it steered me in that direction. The biggest misconception about Buddhism is that the goal is some kind of bliss. In fact, the word nirvana is often used synonymously with bliss. But the real goal of Buddhist practice is liberation. When we act without awareness of these habit energies, then our actions are not truly free. We may think that we made a choice, but really the choice was made for us. We are so often constrained and don't even know it. Whereas if we learn to become more aware of our habit energies at the time when we're doing them, not just afterward you wake up from the dream, then you can consciously choose a different path. And then we are freer, to make better, more loving choices.